From WYPR, I'm Sheila Cast. We're on the record. U.S. Attorney General Jeff Sessions has directed federal prosecutors to bring the toughest possible charges against drug criminals, reversing Obama-era policies that avoided mandatory minimum sentences for nonviolent offenders. Evans Ray Jr. of Prince George's knows about mandatory minimums. He was given one 10 years ago after his conviction for a small role in a cocaine deal constituted his third strike. We talked to Ray and the retired federal judge who reluctantly imposed that life sentence, Alexander Williams Jr.
Criminal justice has to be reformed. It's not working. It's broken. There are too many people in this country being incarcerated, and there's too much, abuse of discretion that's in the hands of those who are in charge of the criminal justice system.
It's On the Record after the news.
You're listening to On the Record, the podcast, a service of your public radio, 88.1 WYPR. Find more podcasts online at wypr.org. And tell us what you think. Send an email to ontherecord@wypr.org.
Good morning. I'm Sheila Cast. We're On the Record. For at least three decades, there's been a tug of war in the courts over how to sentence people found guilty of drug crimes. During the war on drugs in the 1980s, laws were passed to specify mandatory minimum sentences judges must impose on some defendants, especially defendants who have been found guilty twice before. During the Obama administration, there was debate in Congress and many states, including Maryland, about giving judges more flexibility. Now, under the Trump administration, with an epidemic of opioid overdose deaths raging, the policy seems to be growing more rigid. No one is watching this debate more intensely than the two Prince George's County residents we're meeting today. Judge Alexander Williams Jr. was appointed by President Bill Clinton to the U.S. District Court in Greenbelt in 1994 and served there for 20 years before he retired. Now he oversees the Judge Alexander Williams Jr. Center for Education, Justice, and Ethics at the University of Maryland College Park, where we are speaking. Thanks so much for your time.
It's a pleasure to be here and look forward to our conversation.
And also with us is Evans Ray Jr., age 57, trained as a barber, now working at a job training program in Washington, D.C. Evans Ray, I'm pleased to speak with you.
It's a pleasure and an honor.
10 years ago, Evans Ray Jr., you stood before Judge Williams for sentencing in U.S. District Court in Greenbelt. Mr. Ray, what were you accused of?
Distribution of cocaine, and I was lumped into a conspiracy to sell cocaine.
Lumped into a conspiracy. What does that mean?
I had a barbershop, and some guys were under investigation next door to my barbershop. They were under investigation. I frequent their shop. So the FBI and DEA thought that I was a part of whatever they were into.
And you were found guilty. What were you expecting in court that day?
I wasn't expecting a life sentence, that's for sure. Not life plus 10 years for 60 grams of crack cocaine. I was expecting just what the judge gave me. He went against the life sentence that the prosecutors put on the table, and he said that, you know, he felt like he knew everybody that played a part in the case, and that he knew that I didn't deserve life. So he gave me 324 months, which was a lot of time, but it beats a life sentence.
Judge Williams, let me ask you about that. Evans Ray said prosecutors put a life sentence on the table. Was that required?
I had several defendants as part of that conspiracy all before me, and Mr. Ray was the only one that went to trial. He had a fairly minor role in the overall conspiracy, and I knew that. But he went to trial, and he put up a good battle. I think he almost got an acquittal, but unfortunately the jury found him guilty. And once sentencing came up, the mandatory guidelines required that I give him life. And as you know, Ms. Cass, in the federal system, there's no parole if you get life. Life means life in the federal system. I didn't like that, and I attempted to give him a sentence below that based on his record. He had some poor judgment and some prior activity, criminal activity before him, and that's what got him in trouble when he came before sentencing. He was deemed to be a career offender, and he got life. I tried my best to give him a sentence below that, but the prosecutors argued for life. They appealed the sentence that I had given him, and the United States Court of Appeals for the Fourth Circuit then reversed me and sent the case back and directed that I give him a life sentence. And I put on the record at sentencing that I didn't like that. I thought judges needed more discretion, but I was obligated to give him a life sentence, and so I did what the Fourth Circuit Court of Appeals directed me to do.
Evans Ray Jr., what went through your mind when you heard life sentence?
It was a shock. I remember looking back at my parents in the audience, and I remember looking at the judge, and in my heart, I knew that Judge Williams tried to do the best he could so that I didn't receive a life sentence. So what went through my mind was to thank Judge Williams, and I thanked him. I thanked him for trying to give me a lesser sentence, and I told him that I appreciate what he's done. You know, he gave me a fair trial. He gave everybody fairness in the whole, and everything he did throughout the whole thing, it was fair with him. It didn't hit me till I got in the bullpen.
Till you got where?
After they sentence you, the marshals take you to the back, to the bullpen, so that you can go back to the county jail that's holding you, to the federal holdover. And when you're sitting there waiting on the van to come, that's when everything starts going through your head. My lawyer came, and I was real quiet, and I couldn't believe it, but I never claimed it. I knew I was coming home one day.
Why did you feel like you were coming home one day?
I knew that I hadn't taken anybody's life. I knew that I've never had a violent crime in my life. I knew that somewhere along the line, if I stayed vigilant in my prayers, in going to the law library and researching, that something was going to happen. I just didn't feel like I would be taken away from my kids and my mom and my dad and my grandmother for the rest of my life.
That's Evans Ray Jr. Also with us is the federal judge who imposed a life sentence on him for a drug crime, retired Judge Alexander Williams Jr., here on the record on WYPR. Tell us what it was like in prison.
Prison was tough, mentally tough. Judge Williams tried to send me to a place close to home because my grandmother was sick. And he tried to send me to a federal institution called Cumberland. That's what he requested. When I left Judge Williams and they took us to our next destination, which was Upper Marlboro, and then I stayed there about a month or so, and then a federal marshals came to pick us up to take us to the feds, I thought I was going to Cumberland, Maryland, like the judge had asked. What happened was they sent me to a level 6 penitentiary, Big Sandy, in Kentucky.
I don't know what a level 6 penitentiary is.
A level 6 is close to one of the highest penitentiaries that you can be sent to. It's a very dangerous penitentiary. It's violence everywhere. You have to stay in your lane, as we say. You have to program. You have to stay in the law library. If you're in the religion, you go to your religious services. You do everything possible not to get in trouble and to stay focused so that you don't lose your life one day.
So, Evans Ray Jr., you said even when you started your sentence, that you somehow thought you were not going to be in there the rest of your life. When did that begin to take shape for you, that idea?
Well, I remember putting my appeal in, and I got turned down, and I didn't think I was going to get turned down. And it took the Fourth Circuit Court of Appeals a long time to answer me, and I thought that I was going to win. But when the answer came back, I lost. And after that, I had to file a 2255. Which is another avenue when you lose your appeal. So I had 1 year to file that. So I did some more research and some more studying. Mind you, we have to use jailhouse lawyers if you don't have the funds. So, you know, and when my 2255 came back, I lost that. And now I'm feeling kind of messed up, but I'm not going to claim a life sentence. I'm not going to be here the rest of my life. I'm going to stay in the law library. I'm going to stay with my religious services. I'm a Christian. I'm going to stay starting programs for the men that are here that want a program. Victim Impact Program, I did. Domestic Violence, NA, AA. men with goals, anything that I could get involved with that was positive, I stayed doing it. 12 and a half years of my life in the penitentiary, one incident report out of all that time. And it was a minor incident report. So I did what the system expects of me. And when the Obama administration put out that clemency petition and that survey, and I got a chance to fill it out, I fit the criteria.
Judge Williams, let me ask you about this. At some point, I presume you heard that Evans Ray Jr., whom you had sentenced, was being considered for clemency or might be able to be.
Yes, and I think the listeners should certainly understand that that Mr. Ray was just a very pleasant, humble, respectful gentleman when he came before me. And he was a businessman in the community, and Suitland had a barbershop. I remember it quite well. And he wasn't selling drugs. Someone came to him and begged him to get him some drugs. And that person happened to be ultimately working with the police. And Mr. Ray had an excellent entrapment defense, but as I said, he almost got an acquittal, but it just didn't pan out and the jury convicted him. I felt sorry for him, and most judges would like to take into consideration all of the facts and not have our hands tied with some mandatory minimum sentences. It just isn't fair, and most judges understand that. And so when his federal public defender came to me, I was still on the bench at that time, and they asked me for a letter outlining my position in support of his clemency petition, and I gave it. I told the President of the United States that I didn't think he deserved life, that I attempted on my own to give him something less, but I was reversed. And looking at all the facts and circumstances, he just did not deserve to have a life sentence. And I was totally in support of his petition. So I sent that letter off, and I think they came back and got another letter from me after I retired. And ultimately, I learned that President Obama had granted the petition. I was excited for him, and I know he was quite excited.
What's it like to get a letter from the president giving you clemency?
It's so surreal. I remember it like it was yesterday. August the 3rd, I get a knock on the door. It's my counselor at the FCI Gilmer.
What is Gilmer FCI?
It's not a penitentiary. It's a level down. It's a medium high federal corrections facility. It's not so violent. It's not locked down all the time. And she said, I need you in my office at 1 o'clock. And I said, I'm going to the law library. I got to fight my case. I'm trying to go home. She said, I need you in my office. And that's when I got a little worried because my grandmother's ill. I said, no, did my grandmother die? Is something going on? And she said, no, it's not that. She said, but I need you in my office. I said, can you tell me? Miss Park, her name was Park Davis. And she said, no, I can't tell you. She said, I'm a woman. It's like you asking me my age. I can't tell you. I went in her office. She was sitting down in front of me, just like Judge Williams is now. It's a telephone on the table. I'm thinking clemency a little bit. At 1:16, the phone rang. She answered it and gave it to me. The young man's name was Joe Battler from Greenbelt Public Defender's Office. He said, is this Evans Ray Jr.? And I said, yes, sir. He said, I'm Joe Battler. He said, I'm calling to let you know that life plus 10 years that you have, Obama has taken it away. And I just remember sitting back in the chair, and I might have wanted to fall out. I don't know, but it was just so, it was unbelievable. Just like today, it's still surreal. It's been 10 months. August 11th, the 11th of this month made 10 months. I can't believe it. I can't believe it. It's going to be my first Father's Day home with my kids.
How many kids do you have?
I have four kids, ages 14, 16, 18, and 19. I've been to two proms and two graduations, and it is beautiful.
What is your life like now?
Well, I work for a young lady. She gave me a chance at a program called Community Empowerment Training Academy. Her name is Toni Thomas. She's out of Washington, D.C. What I do, I am a consultant,
a mentor, a counselor, everything that the kids need in Washington that she supplies training to. She has three training classes. One is B-Class CDL, which is a 15-week program. One is MOA, Medical Office Assistant, a 12-week program. And one is Unarmed Security Guard. She gets youth from the age of 18 to 24 years old out of the inner city. And they're some tough kids. But my job is to, if they need some counseling, I talk to them. I tell my story. I let them know I don't hold anything back. I don't lie about what happened to me or how it happened. Remember, Judge Williams told you that I played a minimal part, but I made a mistake because I played a part. I'm not saying I was innocent of anything. I committed a crime, and I had to pay for my crime. But life plus 10 years for 60 grams of crack cocaine, that's kind of unbelievable. But my job is a good job, and I get a lot of respect from the kids. And there's some tough ones there, like I said in the beginning. But I love them, and they love me, and they help keep me straight. And I try my best to help keep them straight.
We need to take a quick break here. And when we come back, I want to ask our guests about the changes in criminal justice taking place now. This is On the Record on WIPR. I'm Sheila Cass. Stay with us.
This is the On the Record podcast, a service of Your Public Radio, member supported 88.1 WYPR. You can support this podcast and everything you hear from WYPR. Become a member. Come to WYPR.org and click the donate link.
Welcome back to On the Record. I'm Sheila Cast. We're at the Judge Alexander Williams Jr. Center for Education, Justice, and Ethics at the University of Maryland College Park, discussing mandatory minimum sentences for drug crimes. Judge Williams, our host, is here, as well as Evans Ray Jr., who was sentenced to life in prison for a drug sale and last year was granted clemency by President Obama. In May, Attorney General Jeff Sessions issued a memorandum directing U.S. attorneys to bring the toughest possible charges against drug criminals, presumably triggering the toughest sentences. Let's listen to part of what Attorney General Sessions said at the Justice Department.
We are seeing an increase in violent crime in our cities, particularly in Baltimore, Chicago, Memphis, and Milwaukee, St. Louis, and many others. The murder rate has surged 10% nationwide, the largest increase in murder since 1968. And we know that drugs and crime go hand in hand. They just do. The facts prove that so. If you want to collect a drug debt, you can't file a lawsuit in court. You collect it with the barrel of a gun. In 2015, more than 52,000 Americans died from a drug overdose. That's a stunning number. According to a report by the New England Journal of Medicine, the price of heroin is down, its purity is up, and its availability is up. We intend to reverse this trend. We are returning to the enforcement of the laws as passed by Congress, plain and simple. If you are a drug trafficker, we will not look the other way.
Judge Williams, what's your reaction to that?
Well, I think it's unfortunate that we take a hard-nosed stand in every case that the Attorney General is now requesting the harshest sentence that he can. Every case stands on its own merits, and no one's suggesting that persons who are dangerous to the community ought not be appropriately punished, and judges understand that. But there's a number of judges recently who have simply left the bench because they did not want their hands tied having to impose these tough mandatory minimum sentences on drug people, many of whom were users and abusers and did not deserve life sentences. So I think it's unfortunate that the Attorney General is changing the direction that we saw from the Obama administration that at least took into consideration all of the factors that would govern the sentencings.
As you know, some proponents of mandatory minimum sentences argue they help reduce violent crime by persuading criminals to cooperate with prosecutors. They can be used as a plea bargain. Do you not see it work that way?
No, I think that's an adequate criticism that people have given, that it does take away a person's ability to go to trial because you can't risk being found guilty and given a long sentence. And it does encourage other persons to cooperate, to cut their own deal so that it won't be subject to those mandatory minimum sentences. So it's, I think, a valid criticism that people from the ACLU and other advocates of justice are using. The problem with the mandatory minimum sentences, as I've said in a number of different panels I've been in, is that you've taken the power and discretion away from judges and you've given it over to prosecutors, some of whom are 1 or 2 years out of law school. And it just seems to me that the wisdom of judges should have priority over some of the prosecutors and their tough stance that they take.
Is that going to require a change in the law? And do you think there's any prospect of that in the current political environment?
Well, one of the reasons that I left the bench was to take advantage of my long-term association in criminal justice to try to make some changes. I also served as the elected prosecutor here in Prince George's County, so I'm a law and order guy, and I've been, of course, a public defender and a judge, so I've been on every side. And I just think that criminal justice has to be reformed. It's not working. It's broken. There are too many people in this country being incarcerated, and there's too much, I call it abuse of discretion, that's in the hands of those who are in charge of the criminal justice system. And so my center here, Judge Alexander Williams Center for Justice, is simply looking at doing some research and putting together programs and getting data and doing as much as I can to propose to legislators and others on the executive side various proposals to try to adjust and revise some of the harshness of criminal justice and to reduce the overwhelming number of people incarcerated across this country. America imprisons more people than any other country on the face of this earth right now. And I just think that's uncalled for and it's got to be stopped.
This is On the Record on WYPR. I'm Sheila Cast, talking about the Trump administration's policy on prosecuting and sentencing drug crimes, speaking with retired federal judge Alexander Williams Jr. and with Evans Ray Jr., convicted of a drug crime in 2007 and given clemency by President Obama in 2016. Judge Williams, what are your thoughts about that? Attorney General Sessions links his policy to an increased murder rate, a widespread opioid overdose epidemic, things that the public is worried about. Do you think that there will be a change in the crime rate?
Most people certainly would agree that we can't have dangerous individuals in society perpetrating assaults and murders on people, and they have to be incarcerated. We all understand that. And I think my point simply is that there's a number of nonviolent crimes, and particularly drug crimes, that for some reason the legislators and the policy and the sentencing commission on the federal system have decided that deserve long-term sentences. And my only point is that we ought to give judges a little more discretion so that they can depart either up or down from the guidelines and not be handcuffed by mandatory minimum sentences. And there are too many people who have perpetrated nonviolent offenses who are doing excessive time. And that's a problem for me, and the criminal justice system needs to address that. And so what I'm doing here in this center is trying to get the word to a number of legislators to at least look at altering or changing or taking a good look at the mandatory minimum sentences and see if there's something that we can do to at least adjust it or give some authority to depart. And ultimately, that will reduce the number of nonviolent persons who are serving time. That's my beef. My beef is that nonviolent people and some of these persons convicted of drugs should not be serving these long, excessive sentences of 30, 40, 50 years and life. And that's a problem. So we've got to take a look at our drug policies.
Evans Ray Jr., do you feel like you have some special obligation to speak out because you did get clemency?
Everybody in prison is not bad. Everybody's heart isn't black. There are men and women that are incarcerated now that need a voice. I'm just a small factor of an individual that's trying to let my voice be heard, that's going to continue to do the right thing, going to continue to speak out. I got another friend I deal with, his name Norman Brown. He had two life sentences. Obama commuted his sentence in 2015. He has a nonprofit organization going there where he's helping men and women that come home so that they can have an outlet. And that's part of what I want to do. I want to make sure that the brothers and sisters, no matter what color, I don't see color, I see human beings, because that's what's incarcerated, that they have an outlet, that they have somebody they can come to. I was blessed and fortunate to have the tremendous family that I have, so loving, so caring, that they are there for me even to today.
I'm grateful to you both for speaking with me. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Cass.
Thank you, Ms. Cass.
Evans Ray Jr. got a life sentence in 2007 for a drug crime. He was given clemency last year by President Obama. Retired U.S. District Court Judge Alexander Williams Jr., who reluctantly sentenced him, now oversees a forum at the University of Maryland College Park that seeks to discuss issues facing underserved minority communities. At the On the Record page of WYPR.org, we have a link to the Judge Alexander Williams Jr. Center for Education, Justice, and Ethics at the University of Maryland. I'm Sheila Cass. Glad you've been listening to On the Record. Join us tomorrow.
Thanks for listening to this segment of On the Record with Sheila Cast. You can catch the show on the radio Monday through Friday, 9:30 to 10 a.m. on 88.1 WYPR, your NPR news station. And you can support On the Record and all the other public radio programs that WYPR brings to you. Just click the donate link at the top of WYPR.org. And thanks.